Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Let's Talk TEFL podcast. I'm Jackie and joining me is Jennifer. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, Jackie.
So where are you in the world these days? You seem to travel around a lot.
Yes, I am in Grey England.
Oh, yes. Well, it'll get better soon. I'm sure it doesn't rain and be gray. It's not rain and gray.
I hope so. Year. Although the sun was up before six this morning, so it's kind of my favorite time of the year.
Oh, nice. Yes. Yeah. Well, in Vancouver, thanks to global warming, we've had like some of the hottest days on record for March. So I pulled out the paddleboard. I went paddleboarding. I saw people in like bikinis paddleboarding. Wow. I don't know. It was hot. So freakishly hot, actually. So I'm a bit nervous about the global warming situation. However, I did enjoy the very warm days in March as well. So a bit of love hate, I guess.
Yeah, a little jealous. So, yeah. I'm guessing that we'll be underwater soon enough.
I live in the suburbs, the inland Vancouver, so I will be fine. But yeah, some of the people, I don't know, like right close to the ocean might be in tough shape. We'll see how that goes, I guess, in like 20 or 30 years from now. But hopefully it's fine. Hopefully. Indeed. We'll see, I guess. All right. So on to happier topics. Today, we're going to talk about if you have a very noisy classroom, some strategies and tips and tricks that you can use to kind of fight this or like, just make your classroom a kind of a quieter, calmer place. So we're going to start out with a few things not to do. And then we're going to get into some things that you should do. All right. So first of all, we'll talk about things that don't work if you have a very noisy classroom. So the first one that I have is yelling. If you have like 10, even 5, 10, 15, 20 students who are yelling, who are like shouting at their friends, laughing, doing whatever they're doing, especially if you teach kids, they're just being kids. And if you try to yell over them, there's only one of you, and there's sometimes 15 or 20 or 30 of them. So it doesn't work well. It's not effective. You just kind of look like the crazy, angry teacher a little bit. And yelling is generally not an effective way to control a classroom. So Jennifer, have you ever been there? Have you ever tried yelling or attempted to yell?
I don't think I have ever actually yelled, but I have been so angry before. Like, I had times when I had like 45 kids in a room, like 45 kids in a room that was not made for that many kids, to the extent that I had a few classrooms when I was at public schools that literally the kids had to sit based on what order they walked into the classroom. And then the last few desks had to be brought in with the last few kids because you couldn't walk around in the classroom once all the kids were seated. It was insane. And you can imagine if there's that many kids in that small of a space relative to the number, it didn't take many. And it becomes a losing battle really quickly and very frustrating. That coincided with being the lowest level students that I ever taught as well. And so that was not a fun combination.
That sounds terrible.
Yelling, not effective. First of all, one person is not going to out yell the voices that kids think are inside voices if there's just that many of them going at the same time. And if they're ignoring all of the chatter around them, they are also ignoring you.
Yes. And then add to the fact that you're speaking in a language that is not their first language. So that's just even more reason to tune out yelling. And sorry if my audio has changed, everybody. I just realized my fancy microphone was not on for the first minute of this conversation. Anyway, hopefully it sounds better now. I turned it on. All right. So yelling, not that effective. So Jen, you have the next thing that doesn't work that well.
So sending a child out, if you have one instigator, one kid that is being not just loud, but defiant and an instigator, and if that one kid would just quiet down, then any other kids that are also being noisy would calm down as well. Sending them out really mainly teaches them if they act up in class enough, they get to go have a little break. But also it teaches them if you're sending them out to someone else, which is kind of stepping on Jackie's next thing, that undermines yourself. I will give a little caveat. I taught a kid who was very clearly on the spectrum, and like sometimes he would just basically have times when he was just sort of spiraling out of control. And it would usually be if there was stuff going on where he was already kind of, I don't know, like if we weren't following our usual schedule or anything like that, if anything was sort of overstimulating him, I would send him to the bathroom and I would tell him to just go and sit in there. Mainly because our principal was, I think evil is the nicest way to describe her. But certainly if she had seen him either acting up in class or in the hallway trying to get a hold of himself, like she would have lost her mind and it would have been good for no one. So yeah, I would send him to go hide in the bathroom basically till he could get control.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. Yeah, so parents are often like paying for these English lessons. So if you constantly send out one of those, the kids that the, you know, let parents are paying for that lesson, you're going to have some unhappy parents. And I think for me, the only exception to this was if a kid was like very, very hyper or just like obviously had eaten like 4 chocolate bars before class or something like that. And I would just say like, I'm not mad. Just go into the hallway, take like 20 deep breaths, just like calm yourself, collect yourself, and you can come back in 1 minute. Just like take some breaths and just like calm yourself. And so that was kind of the exception, but it wasn't like done out of anger or anything. I was just like, okay, you just need a minute because your friends are not helping you calm down, right, in this situation. So just go like get yourself together outside the classroom and then come back in when you can. But it was never like an angry thing. It was just like I genuinely wanted them to calm down and like actually focus on class, I guess. Okay, so the third thing that doesn't really work is always asking a co-teacher or principal or whoever, the admin at your school, for help. I know it can be like a little bit tricky if you're a foreign English teacher, say in a place like Korea or China or wherever. It can be tempting to like always just rely on the Koreans at your school or the Chinese teachers or whoever it is, to kind of get them to take on the heavy load of like discipline and talking to parents and talking to kids and all of that. But if you do that constantly, the students won't really respect you as a real teacher. They'll just kind of know that they can like run all over you, and they don't need to respect you. They don't need to listen. They don't need to be quiet, because you're not actually a real teacher with any authority or any classroom control or management or any of that. So I generally think that even if you have a co-teacher in the classroom with you, don't necessarily try to like rely on them 100%. Definitely use some of the strategies we're going to talk about to kind of quiet down your own classroom and have your own ways of dealing with things.
Yeah. And if you do have a co-teacher who is in your classroom, obviously it is really tempting to have them say something in the first language, whatever. First of all, as Jackie just said, you're undermining yourself, but also you are not helping your relationship with your co-teacher if you push them into the role of always being the heavy, you know.
Yeah, the bad guy.
If the co-teacher knows that they're going to have a class with you and you are going to let the kids get out of control and then you're going to look to them to bring it all back, they're not going to enjoy being your co-teacher at all. Mm-mm. And having a co-teacher that you get along well with really, really, really can make a massive difference in your enjoyment and your success at a given school.
Yeah, for sure. And like, even if you put yourself in that opposite position, what if you had a co-teacher who was all fun and playing games and just laughing and doing whatever, and then you had to be the one to do all the discipline and like all the bad kind of like things that the students don't like, teaching all the grammar and all the serious things? You would hate it. I would hate it. I'd be like, why does that person just get to have fun and then I have to do like all the serious bad things? I would be annoyed by that. So Yeah, definitely keep that in mind to not put your co-teacher in that situation, if possible. You should have each other's backs, and it should be like kind of the good and bad thing should kind of be equal in the classroom, I guess.
Yeah, and further to that, the native speaker teacher has far fewer responsibilities. Whatever you think your responsibilities are in the classroom, if you have a co-teacher, that person is the one who has to do all of the parent calls. That person is the one who has to do all of the, whatever the predominant language is. So if you're in Korea, China, wherever, they are the ones who have to do all of the documentation and paperwork. That's the real stuff. You might have to make some little report cards that seem annoying to you, especially if most of the parents can't read them, but they have to make the real ones. And they are probably getting paid a lot less than you and probably work much longer hours. So if you are making their job even less enjoyable, or you're giving them extra unpleasant responsibilities, they are not going to appreciate it.
For sure. For sure. Okay, Jen, so what is your final thing not to do to quiet down a classroom?
If the students really are a chattery bunch of kids, and this is especially with kids, although I'm sure it's all ages, if you never give them a chance to just talk, and they know that they're just going to have to bottle everything up the whole time, that also will set them up to just sort of ignore what you're doing and have their own little side conversations or whatever. And fortunately, it's a language class. So what's a great thing to get your students to do? Talk to each other. So if you can put in a little time where if they're talking to each other and they're using English, but it's not necessarily on topic, then that can also help with the kids being chattery and not focusing on the lesson.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And yeah, I like to have a few like high energy activities, something like running dictation or just something kind of like a fun survey thing or something where students can just like stand up, walk around, move around the class, and just actually talk and kind of get a bit of energy out instead of just sitting at their desks the whole time. So yeah, I have a mix of activities in the class for sure. So students can get a little bit of the energy that they have out. Okay, so let's talk about things that work now that we've covered the things that don't work. So the first thing that works is setting clear rules and expectations. So I, on the first day of class, I talk about my rules and when I go over my syllabus and the grading and all that. But the one thing that relates to this topic is that I have a rule of one person talking at a time. So it can be me teaching, or it can be one of the students giving like an answer or whatever, something like that. And I'm actually so serious about it. So the second that I'm teaching and someone else is talking, I'll actually stop and look at them and just say, why are you talking right now? Or if another student is talking and someone else is talking to their friend or whatever, I will actually just stop the class and just say, why are you talking? It's only one person at a time. And I only have to do that like two or three times. And then it's like students know I'm actually so serious about it. So that doesn't necessarily quiet down like a class. If you walk into this kind of very loud kind of class at the beginning, that's not a good strategy, but that is a good strategy for during the class when things are happening. Just be very serious about only one person talking at a time, because everyone likes to be respected. If they're talking, answering a question, they don't want everyone talking over them. I don't want people talking over me. So yeah, I try to give the same respect to my students and let them talk. And I expect that in return, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Being clear with your expectations is really important no matter what your expectations are. And also making it clear that when the one person that's speaking is a student, you are going to give them your undivided attention as well. So when they can see that it's a two-way street, then that really goes far. I will say the older they are, the farther it goes. When you have little kids, they might be like, eh, I don't care.
Whatever. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. It's, my context is mostly university students. So that was actually like the easiest thing to like only once or twice or three times. I was like, why are you talking right now? And like, I would say it kind of with a smile on my face, like not an angry, like, why are you talking? And they'd be like, oh, okay. And then they would stop talking and that would be the end of that. So it wasn't the most difficult thing, but yeah, definitely. I had rules and then I definitely followed through with them, I guess, was the key. Okay, Jen, so what's your thing about teacher prep?
it's not just like having your students have expectations, but having expectations from the students on you, which is when the students walk in or when class is ready to start, you have everything ready to go. I like to have, you know, all of my materials laid out like in the order that I'm going to need them. So I'm not shuffling around on my desk. On the whiteboard, like make use of your whiteboard, put any information the students need to know, any materials they need to have out and ready for the class, what the lesson objectives are going to be, whatever, any information that would be helpful for them to know to have a smooth lesson. Because one of the best times for students to start their little side conversations is when you just take a couple of seconds to look for something on your desk because you put it all there, but you didn't lay it out in an orderly fashion for yourself to find when you need it right then. So just not having any of that kind of teacher downtime when you are segueing into the next segment of the lesson, like have your stuff ready at hand, no pauses.
And something I learned over the years, if something can go wrong in terms of like computer consoles and PowerPoints and projectors, and the projector takes 5 minutes to warm up because it's a new bulb or like whatever. So it wasn't always possible, but generally I would try to get to class like 10 or 15 minutes early and just kind of go over like all the things, turn everything on, have all my like worksheets stacked up, ready to go. And I'd write some things on the whiteboard, and then inevitably one or two students would have a question or have some sort of like concern about homework or a question about a test. So I'd chat to them. And then by the time class actually, like if it started at 10, by the time 10 o'clock rolled around, everyone was in their seats. I was ready to go and I just started class. There was no downtime. Yeah, downtime is a big problem when it comes to noisy classrooms. And I would say it's probably the biggest cause of student kind of misbehavior at various levels, not just talking, but like getting up out of their desk and eating snacks and like so many things go wrong if there's a lot of downtime in the class. So yeah, definitely be prepared and avoid it if at all possible. And that will go a long way to helping you have better managed classes, I guess.
Yeah. And also that is something that students will pick up pretty quickly if like every class you're wasting, even if it's just a couple seconds here and there, like those are little wedges that they can like force their way in and spread the time that's being wasted, you know, and they can get a feel that, oh, this is just how this class goes. We're switching activities. So now I've got a minute to talk to my friend because the teacher is looking for the stack of worksheets, or the teacher forgot to get out glue sticks or whatever it is, you know, just try to eliminate those little opportunities.
Yeah. I want my students to think like, oh, wow, Jackie's all business all the time. And like, I like to have fun and like have a laugh, but like, for sure, I don't want them to ever think that I'm not prepared or not serious about teaching them English or whatever. So I just try to be like very, like just like pretend I'm at some big corporation, I'm doing a presentation, I'm like got it organized, I'm ready to go. Like that's what I want my students to feel like. They're just in this situation where it's like, okay, we're here to learn and this is a serious thing and we're just going to do it and get it done. And yeah, having downtime is a little bit the opposite of what I actually want to convey to my students and how I want my classes to run. Okay, so Jen, the next thing you said, lowering your speaking voice. So how does that work?
So rather than raising your voice and trying to yell, if you just lower your voice a little bit when your impulse is to raise it, then the students have to kind of lean in a little bit and focus. And this one may not always work. It depends on your students, but it's definitely worth a try. And if it doesn't work, Jackie, your next step?
Wait it out. So it kind of throws students off sometimes. If you like just if everyone's talking, and if you just stand at the front of the class and just look at them, but don't actually do anything or say anything, it only takes, you know, a couple seconds for a few students to notice like, oh, what's happening right now? And they kind of stop talking. And then as soon as a few people stop talking, everyone else is like, oh, it's suddenly quieter. And then they kind of stop talking. It doesn't always work. It depends on the situation and the students, but It's a strategy to try. Just stand at the front of the class and just wait. It's better than yelling. Certainly better than yelling, I think.
Yeah.
And even if it takes 30 seconds, it takes, you know, 30 seconds and that's fine. But especially adults will just kind of sense like, oh, she's ready to start class. Something is happening. And then they'll just kind of naturally stop talking.
Yes. And a further step, if standing at the front of the class isn't getting the response or most of the class is quiet and down, but there's a few holdouts. If you circulate around and just go hover around the holdouts, that little bit of closeness can make them feel a bit uncomfortable. And I don't mean like getting like right in their face or breathing on their neck or anything, but if you're just loitering by their desk and everybody knows, like it's sort of putting a spotlight on who the people who are disrupting the class is.
And sometimes, sometimes I'll do that. And then I'll even touch, you know, the desks of the people that are talking and just kind of be like, we're starting class now. We're going to start class. And then they're okay. Like just because I was standing right there and kind of whispering, we're starting class now. Oh, okay. Like, yeah. I don't know. If they're kind of, students are often like thrown off by that. So it kind of just stuns them into silence a little bit of like, oh, okay. We're ready to go. The teacher is directly talking to me, telling me we're going to start class. So they often don't know how to respond to that. So that's a way of like, yeah, quieting down students as well.
I like that using a very quiet voice to do it. So it's like you're letting them in on a little secret, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
We're starting class.
We're starting now. Oh, okay. Like, I don't know. It's just funny. It's funny. Okay. And then the next thing I have is taking a quick break outside of class. So this is for like kind of emergency purposes. This isn't like a regular thing. And I honestly only end up doing this probably like say once or twice a year. It's if you have a class that absolutely will not stop talking and is just a little bit out of control maybe, or just for whatever reason, they just won't be quiet and you kind of tried the other strategies. It's not necessarily working. You can just go outside the class and just wait outside the class for like 15 or 20 seconds. And the students are still, if you teach kids, they're still supervised. You're literally standing outside the classroom. Make sure the students can't lock the door, lock you out, because that's a bad situation. However, with university students, it's fine. I never worried about that. But with kids, I had a friend that happened to, so that's not good. But anyway, so just go stand outside the class for a few 20 seconds or whatever, and students are really thrown off by it. And they don't know what's happening. They don't know how to respond to it. And then just walk into class, and it's often silent, dead silent. And everyone is just staring at you, waiting for something to happen because they don't actually know what's happening or what to expect. So if you do this too often, students will kind of, it will lose its power, but it does have some power in certain situations if not used that often.
Really, anything that you do that is something that you've never done before and is really dramatic is going to have power that first time, but it's rapidly diminishing returns.
Yes. So keep it in your back pocket for emergencies. Don't make this your like regular thing.
No. Sure.
But yeah, like once a semester or twice a semester, it can be effective.
Yeah. Okay. And my final one is having a call and response or some sort of sound cue that lets the students know that you need their full attention. So a call and response, there are millions of them that you can use. You can do 1, 2, 3, eyes on you, 1, 2, 3, eyes on me. You can do crisscross applesauce, which I heard only in Korea, because in the US, like that's how you sit on the ground. I mean, there's millions. I know in the ESL classroom management book, we have a whole bunch of them that you can use. None of those spark any interest. You can look on Pinterest and you can literally, like, teachers will make whole infographics of a million different call and response sounds that you can do. You can also do a clapping one, so one that was popular in Korea because that had to do with the World Cup. But that would get so the teacher does it once and then the students do it. And then you might do it 2 or 3 times. And then the third time or whatever your number is, you might be an absolutist one time. That's it, kids. But if you set it up so it's you know, the third time is the one, then that lets them get out their last little, you know, finish their story with their friend or whatever they're doing, and then focus on you and go on with the lesson or move on to the next activity, whatever it is. And if you don't want to do a call and response, you don't want to do a clap. I know some teachers have like a xylophone, or I mean, that's usually with little kids, I'll say, because, you know, the little toy ones, or they might have a triangle. I know some people will use like a sound clip that either might be a little song or just a few seconds of a song, or it might be like a buzzer sound, whatever, anything and everything. If you can imagine it, if it can signal to your students that it's time to redirect back to you, then it will work for your classroom, as long as you set it up, like explain to them what the result is supposed to be.
Yes. When I clap, you clap, and then we be quiet, not yes. just like continue chatting with your friend. So that kind of reminded me of just one thing that I often do. If I have like a little pair conversation activity or like a little small group thing or whatever, if I say, okay, you have 6 minutes to talk with your partner, you have 10 minutes to come up with whatever in your group or something, I'll, on the PowerPoint, I'll put down, or like just if we have a screen, I'll find on an internet a countdown timer, and I'll put the countdown timer on, and then it will just start beeping, whatever, after like 10 minutes. And students will automatically just kind of stop what they're doing, and then they'll just look and kind of wait to see what's happening. So that's just kind of a very simple way that avoids the teacher having to say, okay, let's come back, okay, everyone quiet please, and it's just like the timer just does it for you. And yeah, so that's like a nice way to move things along in a classroom without having to be the bad guy, I guess, and like get everyone to wrap it up. The timer does that purpose for you.
Yes.
Okay, so go ahead.
No, I'll just reiterate that if you are doing a timed activity, if you have like a big screen or something that you can put the timer up there so they can all see it, and if it has a buzzer or a bell or something to indicate that the time is up, yes, that is a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah. It's magic, actually, doing this. Is that everyone just finishes and they just wait attentively to see what's going to happen next. And you don't even have to really do any classroom management at all. All right. So I think that's it for how to quiet a noisy classroom. I hope everyone has picked up some very practical tips about how to manage a classroom more effectively. There are lots more kind of tips and tricks in a book that Jennifer and I wrote together, ESL Classroom Management Tips and Tricks. I'll put the link, but you can also find it easily on Amazon or just wherever you like to buy books. So you can also find all the podcast info at eslactivity.org/podcast. And yeah, I think that's about it. Anything else? Any final things from you, Jennifer?
Nothing else from me. Thanks for listening.
Okay. All right. We'll catch you next time, everyone. Bye.
Bye.